allow the local churches to take responsibility for distribution, there was an immediate need for collaboration in order to reach the point where that was possible. Padwick argued for closer cooperation because it would eventually lead to a self-reliant Arabic-speaking Christian community in Egypt. This further highlighted the need for appropriate forms of literature that would eventually be developed by local Christian offices. As with the newspaper campaign, devotional literature also required effective translators. The report was mindful of the need to develop literature that resonated with the Muslim reader. In light of this, it advocated the production of a greater number of original texts written in the native languages of the Muslim world. Adopting an appropriate style of language for the newspaper or for devotional works, and using colloquial forms, such as Atmiya in Arabic, was key to developing Christian literature as a missionary tool. It suggested that where possible, these should be written by Muslim converts, because they would have the best understanding of their readers' expectations. Concerned that it would be difficult to find converts who fully understood and were able to express Christian truths elegantly and clearly, the report suggested a form of combined missionary and Arab Christian authorship in the initial stages. Thus, next to the proposals for newspaper evangelism, the report's shaping of a missionary approach through devotional literature presented a new direction for Christian mission and a framework for private engagement with Islam. Alongside the public Christian discourse it envisaged developing in the newspapers, these recommendations provided an approach for personal or private exploration of Christianity. An advantage of this was that it helped ease the considerable risk Muslims took when they showed any interest in the Christian faith. Reports in the papers of the missionary archives contain numerous stories about the fate that awaited Muslim apostates. Where public encounter was sometimes difficult, prayers and liturgies written in Arabic allowed people to explore the religion in private. However, this was not a realm of retreat, but one of deeper and bolder engagement. I intimated at the outset of this paper that in addition to advocating closer cooperation between missionary organisations and between foreign missions and Arab Christians, the report gave rise to a new form of collaboration. It is my central contention that the chapters of Padwick's report that I have discussed today and their recommendations for new forms of missionary work sowed the seeds for a distinctive kind of collaboration between Christians and Muslims, one that the contemporary world seems almost to have forgotten. It is to this and Padwick's final project that I want to turn in conclusion. Padwick's early work for the report concluded that increased publication of Christian prayers and hymns in Arabic would convey the message of the spiritual core of the Christian faith. She wanted Muslims to experience the daily prayers and practices of the average Christian believer. She maintained that alongside the articles in the press, this would present a personal and private experience of Christianity with which the Muslim inquirer could engage. I suggest that the remarks about Christian missionary literature made in this report formed the early stages of Padwick's most significant project. After 30 years of working as a missionary in Muslim countries, she approached the question of engaging with the praying heart of the religion from the other direction. Her early efforts to draw the Muslim into the devotional liturgical world of Christianity inspired her to seek the same experience for herself in Islam. She collaborated with the prayers and devotions of Islam and became convinced that seeking to understand them was essential in the task of communicating the gospel. This project found its expression in Padwick's most important publication, Muslim Devotions, a Study of Prayer Manuals in Common Use. It was the product of a 40-year study of the daily devotional prayers of Islam. In her introduction to the book, Padwick explains that it is written primarily with the Christian missionary in mind. In it, she invites the reader into the world of Islam by leading him on a journey through the prayers of the religion. The book itself is a masterpiece of Muslim-Christian collaboration, as Padwick used prayer manuals written by Muslim scholars from the 8th century onwards, which she read and studied with Muslim sheikhs and booksellers across the Middle East. She combined the translations she made of the prayers and commentaries with her own comments to offer her reader instruction in the Muslim religion. Muslim Devotions was not published until after Padwick had retired, and only 7 years before her death. However, she began buying the prayer manuals and studying them around 1925, shortly after writing the report for the Committee on Christian Literature. I have shown that part of the inspiration for her study of Muslim prayer grew out of the arguments made concerning the value of Christian devotional literature for the inquiring Muslim. In advocating new directions for missionary work, the popular printed press, and devotional literature, Padwick's report aimed for Christian publication to reach a wider audience, to cater for different reading abilities, and to offer different forms of approach, public and private. These proposals offered ways for the Muslim to engage with the lived reality of the Christian faith, and they inspired Padwick's own encounter with the lived reality of Islam. Together, they shaped her project. She combined writing and editing Christian journals and other publications, her public engagement with Islam, with a long and careful study of Muslim devotion, her private engagement with Islam. The later collaborative work with Muslim prayer seems to have been inspired by the report's early suggestions concerning Christian devotional works. Padwick came to believe that the prayers of the faith shape the faith of the believer, and the creed for her work with Muslims became lex orandi, lex credendi. She developed a relational approach that introduced Muslims and Christians to the daily reality of the other religion through the practices and traditions that shape their lives. This form of collaboration with the daily prayer life of Muslims enabled Padwick as a missionary to engage with Islam in public in an informed and knowledgeable way at a time when Western missionaries were under considerable threat from Muslim opposition. It was possible because her primary mode of encounter had been at the heart of the religion's prayers and devotions. Thus, the report commissioned by the committee alerted the missionary world to the power of literature for Christian mission. The power of the printed page in the world of Islam highlighted the growing power of the press and called missionaries to use the newspapers to witness to Christianity. Concurrently, it stressed the importance of the literature of Christian devotion as a means of inviting Muslims into the prayerful world of the religion. Both provided immediate opportunities for cooperation and collaboration between different missionary societies and with local Christian churches and communities. In the longer term, they inspired a collaborative form of engagement with Islam. Press and prayer together exemplify the early signs of Padwick's two-pronged approach, and yet one side of that engagement has been lost. She proposed that this might sustain a more public form of encounter that embodied a genuine form of collaboration. It was at this level that Padwick conducted her work as a missionary. Inspired by the findings of the report, she developed this double engagement with Islam, public and private. And as faithful encounter between the religions became an increasingly urgent task, she offered a radical, and one might argue, still to be brought to fruition, model for future collaboration with Islam.
Katrina, thank you very much. You've given us a very clear understanding of Constance Padwick, her context, which I found very illuminating, and what she was aiming to achieve. And that's tremendously helpful. I'd like to open it up now for questions and comments.
How was her work received by the CMS? Was she seen as a sort of pioneering a new way, or was she seen as somehow pushing the boundaries too far, perhaps even particularly the intra-Christian boundaries in terms of collaborative?
I think her work was, I'll say two things. Quick answer to her final project, Muslim Devotions. It's interesting that it was supposed to be published by SPCK and then they refused to publish it. And I still haven't found out exactly why. But in the end, it was published by another publishing house, and people who knew her at the time suggest it was because it was seen as too much of a controversial project. So latterly, when she actually tried to put it all in writing, it was seen as more controversial. What's interesting about her is that she was very committed to the establishment. She wasn't a sort of maverick who went off and did these things on her own. She was a sort of loyal member of the Church Missionary Society. And her intra-Christian work was seen as one of the things she really brought to CMS. She was often sort of described as the she was the secretary of this committee because she had a real knowledge of how the different missionary societies in that part of the world were working and how they worked together. And I think she managed to acquire this credibility despite what she was saying, if you like, because she was quite strategic in what she wrote and how she wrote it. And in parallel with making some of these quite bold suggestions, she wrote some of the most sort of well-received and highly respected biographies of famous Christian missionaries. She wrote four over the course of her career, and she picked people like Henry Martin, Temple Gairdner, these sort of great figures of Anglican mission to the Muslim world. And I suggest that that was part of what really kind of established her in Christian mission and enabled her to say these other more exciting things.
Comment on how the fact that she's a woman impacts all of this. If a man had been doing this sort of literature work, would it have been received differently? How does she relate to Muslim women?
I think she's...
Is literature work seen as something that's suitable for women missionaries at this point?
There are a lot of female missionary writers, but Emma and I were just discussing it earlier. Their subject matter was very different to what she was writing about. So there were these journals for women, you know, written by women missionaries for the women back home, the kinds of things that you were talking about, the monthly packet and things like that, that missionaries in the field were also contributing to. But I think where she differs from that is that her audience were not female. They were actually predominantly male in terms of both the biographies and the stuff that she was saying about Christian devotion, Muslim devotion. In terms of did she work with women, I think that's another area in that she crossed boundaries, basically, because of this interest in the kind of barely literate, providing songs and stories and simpler language. That did take her into the world of working with women and children, and she began her work as a missionary working in Egypt for the Nile Mission Press and setting up their children's publication department. So her background had been in children's and women's work.
What's her educational background?
She studied at SOAS. She left. She went on a trip to Palestine when she was 18 and sort of fell in love with the Arab world and wanted to go back there and was rejected by CMS on grounds of ill health. So she went out with the Nile Mission Press to Egypt instead, spent a couple of years and then realised that she wasn't as qualified as she wanted to be and went back to SOAS and studied and then reapplied to the CMS and was accepted, making this case that they needed someone to do more work on literature. Yeah, I wish I could tell you more. The hardest thing at the moment about this project is finding out any personal details about her. She didn't leave. I haven't met any surviving family, and she didn't keep a diary. So it's quite hard to piece together the sort of... Sorry? Well, yeah, I mean, there are lots of letters. So that's where sort of reflections on her sort of more personal Christian life come from. And she was born, you know, into a Church of England Anglican family, and became particularly interested in contemplative prayer and sort of Christian spirituality as an adult, and read a lot of Christian devotional works herself. Big kind of great interest in Julian of Norwich and Teresa of Avila, and was very I think another reason why she was good at this role of sort of coordinating the different sort of warring missionary societies, particularly the more conservative, evangelical, and less so in the Middle East, was that she came from had quite an experience of conservative evangelicalism, but had moved away from that, and so was seen as someone who could slightly see different perspectives, if you like.
How was it with censorship in Egypt, in Pakistan, for newspapers and presses?
Censorship?
Censorship, yeah.
I don't know. I'm not going to even... it's a really interesting question. Do you mean before they were printed?
Yes, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I know that the editors had an enormous amount of power and influence over what went into the press. That's why there was this kind of stress in the report.